right. This is Andros Sturgeon.
And I am Justin Womack.
And we are the Marketing Geeks. That's right. We are officially kicking off the podcast. This is podcast number one. If for those of you who are listening to the good old days of when we were young and dumb and just starting out, how are you, Justin?
I am doing well. And let me say that we truly are. I mean, I live and breathe this stuff. So from a geek standpoint, like, yeah, I'm a marketing geek.
We are a marketing geek. And I am currently, we're on opposite sides of the world, aren't we, right now?
I know. Yeah. I'm over in Camarillo, California, and you are?
I am in the Netherlands, in Helmond, which literally translates to
hell.
The mouth of hell.
Oh, yeah. It does. Wow. Okay.
It does. But you know what? It's great over here. The Netherlands is awesome.
Yeah. 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 Look, I mean, looks amazing. I'm excited to get out there. One of these days, I will finally get out there to visit, and it'll become our reality.
We're going to crush it, man. We're going to crush it. So, righteous brother. Well, here we are, the Marketing Geeks, and what a geek week it's been, let me tell you.
Well, we're one day removed from Father's Day. And
we are.
I didn't want to talk about that for a minute.
Your new dad. What is it? How's it like to be a dad?
It's interesting. You know, it's. I did it. Actually, it was funny. I went on the radio with that real estate radio show that I've done a few times. I went on there last weekend. We talked about Father's Day, and I'm like, you know what it is? It's disruptive. It's your life's going one way, and you have your little patterns and your schedule, and then now. Now things are quite a bit different. Now, you know, now every 3 hours in the middle of the night, I'm getting woken up, time to change a diaper, time to help feed.
Well, that's cool that you're doing that, man. You know what? There's a lot of men who will not touch a diaper.
That's true.
So good on you.
I'm changing the diapers, and I've been peed on twice now. So twice the pees come through the diaper onto me. And then,
by the baby or just?
Oh, not by the baby. No, that's just random. Oh, okay.
That's okay. Strangers coming up to you and peeing on you. Usually you got to pay extra for that, but you know.
That's right. Yeah.
So I'll tell you the other thing that trips me out about being a dad is the time that just passes. Like, honestly, I'm not kidding, man. You are going to blink and all of a sudden you'll be like, shit, this kid is 5 years old. What the hell?
Today is his 4 week. He's 4 weeks old today. And I mean, that's already happened pretty fast. So, you know, we'll be at a month on this coming Thursday. He'll be a month, and then, you know, I'll blink and he'll be one. He'll be speaking, and then I'll be in college. And then, you know, and then
he's just going to be like, fuck you, dad. I'm you and your dumbass marketing show. I'm going to go off and surf.
Yeah. I'm talking to the baby now, and I'm like, one day you're going to be talking about me in therapy sessions, telling me how bad you fucked up my life.
That's okay. You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure that I do ayahuasca with my son as soon as he's ready. I'm going to wait until he's asking the right questions, and then fuck yeah, we're going to go do ayahuasca. You know, I live in a country where you can do mushrooms and smoke weed and go to a prostitute. And as soon as he's 7 years old, we're going to do all three of those for his birthday.
Wow. And apparently this show is rated. Is this PG-13 or is this R? I guess this is an R-rated show.
I don't know, man. You know what? I think that we need to just speak freely, and I don't intend this show is not going to be designed for little kids. You know why? Little kids are not marketing. They're not marketing people.
It's very, very true.
You know what I'm saying? So
I think entrepreneurs are getting younger, but from a general standpoint, you really have to be a certain age, and you have to appreciate the adult language and things like that. If you're going to market, I mean, that's just the reality. That's how business works. I mean, have you seen The Wolf of Wall Street?
You're not going to believe this, but I love Martin Scorsese. I have not seen The Wolf of Wall Street.
You need to go revisit that film.
I know. Like right after this, but you know what? I take my cue from George Carlin, who said there are no bad words. There's bad intentions, but there are no bad words. You know, there's bad, you know, you could say something with bad intention. Like my wife, she does that all the time. I go, honey, I've been working hard. And she goes, oh, really? You know, I mean, she's just saying, oh, but you know what she means.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Bad intentions.
Bad intentions. So, Oh, really? So, tell me, man, what have you been up to I want to know, first of all, what's the geekiest thing that you're into right now? What is your geek pleasure these days?
That's a good question. I think what's, I guess right now it's copywriting, because I think I've told you a little bit about this, but I'm now a featured professional on Fiverr. So I'm actually a Fiverr pro designated a pro on Fiverr. And so,
okay, rewind that a second, because a lot of people do not know what that means. I want to know what that means.
Well, first of all, let's define what Fiverr is. So Fiverr, which is spelled Fiverr, two R's, is a website for freelancers or for people or for business owners that want to buy basic services, where they can go online and they can find like people that will create logos, people that will do videos, things like that, starting at $5. Now Fiverr has since branched off and they've created what's called a pro division. And the pro division is the vetted professionals. So I've been vetted apparently that can charge much more for their services. So the lowest I can charge as a Fiverr pro is $100 per gig. And the most is I can charge unlimited. So I have to, any gig that I offer, I start at $100. And so I've started doing a lot of copywriting gigs, meaning that I'm writing sales material for email marketing campaigns. So I have a lot of different business owners coming from tons of different industries. I've already worked with like a company that does like a beer of the month. I've worked with real estate companies. I've worked with HVAC companies. I'm working with a ton of different ones. I have a company right now that's doing like hangover pills.
Wow.
I'm writing.
You can get the beer company and the hangover beer company together.
Yeah, get them together.
Do like a package deal, and maybe you could just work for beer and hangover cures.
But the point is, so since I've started this, I've been going out and buying additional, you know, I've already known a lot about copywriting. I've done a lot of studying. I've been through a lot of courses on it, but at this point I've gone out and bought like David Ogilvy books. So I went on Amazon and I bought like four different, like the old school David Ogilvy books. And David Ogilvy is like the godfather of marketing from the 1950s Mad Men era. And
give us
kind
of
reading through those.
What are some titles of some of those books? So
we got Confessions of an Advertising Man by David Ogilvy, Scientific Advertising. Actually, I think that one is, might be Claude Hopkins. And then there's, I think it's Ogilvy on Marketing. It's something like that. I don't have the titles in front of me, but they're all worth a read. And if you're serious about copywriting, these are he is the guy that kind of created all the psychological techniques, along with who's the guy you were talking about? That's Freud's brother or Freud's cousin.
Oh yeah. It starts with an M. Maze.
Blanking on his name.
Jeez, Louise, how could I? Okay. Hold on a second. Thank you, internet.
Bernays.
Right. Edwin Bernays. That's the guy.
Yeah. So I think Ogilvy probably studied him a lot and kind of took his stuff to the next level.
Yeah. Edwin Bernays, for those of you who don't know, was Freud's cousin, who basically took a lot of Freud's methodologies and turned it into modern day focus groups. And basically it was like the dark side of the force where, Freud wanted to help people and get people mentally well. And he wanted to basically take that same ability and sell people shit. So,
yeah, the other books that I've been reading too are like the ones by Robert Cialdini, like Influence and Persuasion, and those are interesting too. But they all get into the same psychological triggers, and people for generations now, this doesn't change. So the marketing concepts and things might change, but the underlying strategies are always going to be the same. And people are just triggered by things like scarcity, for instance.
Right.
So if I were to tell someone I'm selling them a product, that's one thing. But if I say, now this product is available for a limited time, and we all remember those infomercials from the 1990s I was a kid in the 90s, and they'd have an infomercial and it's like, act now, but if you buy within the next 15 minutes, you not only get this, but you also get this bonus.
Right.
And so that, that call within the next 15 minutes thing, that's fake scarcity. Because they're not, you know, back then they weren't tracking whether you called in the next 15 minutes of some commercial that they randomly aired at a time that they don't even know when it aired.
Right.
So so things like that, those are psychological triggers to create urgency. And it's and usually, more often than not, it's fake. Sometimes it's real. But more often than not, it's fake scarcity. And they're like time triggers or they're unit triggers. Like, we only have three of these available, so act fast. Or, you know, or they're only going to the next 10 and we've already sold seven of them. Something like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm learning all these different psychological copywriting maneuvers.
So how to manipulate people, and which is really all that marketing is, isn't it? It's just a methodology to manipulate people.
But manipulation with a positive intent is called influence. Manipulation with a negative intent is called manipulation.
Ah.
According to me.
According to you. So says you. Well, that's really interesting. So definitely worth checking out. So you now you're a Fiverr pro, and that's your geek thing that you're looking
into. Copywriting. Copywriting is okay. My geek thing. So study. I'm really getting into learning the ins and outs of copy, and this is copy is great for everything. I mean, we're talking that's what goes on websites, that's what goes on emails, that's what goes on
the text SEO, everything. Yeah.
Everything is copy. And then there's social proof. So one of the biggest indicators, this is another geek thing, is when they did a test in the book Influence, they did a test on what was like the number one indicator of whether somebody bought something or not. And the number one indicator was actually telling them that their neighbors had bought the same product was the number one absolutely. Indicator of somebody else buying. So it's the, and that's all, I mean, that's social proof or getting in with like the herd mentality. So like herd mentality is bigger than scarcity and bigger than anything else. So if you want to sell something, tell them that their neighbor's buying it. Keep up with the Joneses. That's how you do it.
I see. So that's good to know. And, you know, we all know that because social proof is, as we know, one of the best ways to manipulate marketing. And that's why, you know, obviously Facebook has done so well as an advertising platform, because when you see that your friends are liking something, then, you know, people tend to buy it.
You get that dopamine spike.
I'm not on Facebook as much as I used to be. I didn't disconnect my Facebook, but I'm in the middle of a Facebook protest right now. So I am not really on the platform, and all Facebook related apps I've pretty much removed from my phone except WhatsApp. I'm a little dissatisfied with Facebook right now.
Yeah, the problem is Facebook is so damn powerful, and they control everything, and they, you know, they own WhatsApp and they own Instagram and they own Oculus Rift, the VR company, and they're acquiring. And you, I mean, at the top of everything, you have like what Google, Facebook, and Amazon are like the kings of the world right now.
Well, I mean, that's after Vladimir Putin, obviously,
and James Cameron.
James Cameron. Exactly. So my geek passion is I just discovered this is this very platform I'm recording this on. This is a platform I'm using called Zencastr. Zencastr it's pretty interesting. What it does is it records you and your guest on separate audio channels. Like basically it saves the direct MP3 locally and then kind of marries them together. So you don't have feedback, and the sound back and forth is really good. Well, we'll see. We'll see what the final, you know, please let us know what you think.
It seems pretty awesome so far. I mean, this is my first experience with it, and we need an affiliate link so that we can sell it to all our listeners.
That's right. We'll have to look into that. And the other thing that I'm really into geek-wise is I've finished the whole entire learning tree for Dutch in Duolingo. Now I'm using Babbel. Babbel is a new app that I'm using for language learning.
Nice.
I really like it. Yeah. And
How's it coming? Like how fluent are you? How well do you keep up with conversations now?
Ik kan praten Nederlands goed. Ik kan praten met mensen in Beche in de winkel. Maar mijn werkmensen praten te snel, zo ik kan praten het niet. So
what did you just say? Did Jesus insult me?
What I said was I'm learning Dutch. I can understand it pretty well, but if the people I work with talk too fast, I don't understand any of it.
Yeah, so, that's like when I was trying to learn Spanish. I did 5 years of Spanish. I didn't get held back or anything. I actually started in eighth grade. But the biggest challenge, it's like reading, it's one thing, but then listening to people that are fluent in the language, they're so fast.
Yeah,
it takes a long time to decipher words.
And you know, there's other things too, like just cultural references. You know, like in America, we'll throw out a cultural reference about something or throw out a line of a movie, and you know, so they'll make jokes about like some famous soccer player that had a big game 10 years ago, and I don't know what that, or like they'll reference an old commercial or something. I don't know what they're talking about, you know. But overall, it's a fairly easy language to learn for the most part. But every time I feel like I'm getting a little bit ahead, I fall back a little bit. But I'm ik oefen in elke dag on de train. I practice every day on the train, and so I do Duolingo, and I'm doing this.
I think for me, like if there was a person that English is their second language trying to communicate with me, like I tend to be really sarcastic, and I must be like a nightmare to understand. They probably think I'm like this terrible, terrible person because I use so much sarcasm.
I just think you're a terrible person, whether or not you use sarcasm.
Yeah.
So, exactly. So I've been getting into, you know what, I hate to admit this, but I haven't watched any Westworld this season. I'm waiting till I can.
Oh my god,
is it good?
There you know, I just finished episode 9 last night, and the season finale is this coming Sunday.
So that's why I'm probably just gonna sit and binge watch it at some point. But have you got a chance to see The Handmaid's Tale?
No, I have not. I've seen only, I want to see it. I sat down and watched the first episode, and then I just got distracted and didn't come back to it. It was good, though.
It's great. It's great. It's definitely your paranoid liberal fantasy come true. And, you know, but it's really well written, and I really dig the show really well. And then
I did go back and watch the girl on that show. She's on Mad Men. So I went back and watched the entire Mad Men series, which is kind of loosely based on David Ogilvy, the guy I was talking about earlier. Yeah. That's a good show, though.
Yeah, it is a good show. It is a good show. And what's her name? Moss.
Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah. Good. You're Scientologist. Not that I.
Is she a Scientologist?
Yeah.
Good for her. Good for her.
You know why she's a good Scientologist? Because you don't know she's a Scientologist. That's why she's a good Scientologist.
Yeah, that's actually impressive. Yeah,
yeah, pretty much.
She doesn't shove it down your throat like
she's, well, other not not mine, but you know. it's definitely a good show. Now here's an interesting little thing about being a father, which you're going to really appreciate. Not is that you're going to get to see every single kid's movie that comes out.
I can't wait.
I saw the most wretched kids film the other day. It was not only was it the worst kids film I ever saw, it was probably one of the worst movies I ever saw.
What is it? Is it new?
It was called Sherlock Gnomes. And
I think I've heard of it. I think I've heard of it.
To another movie which I never saw called Romeo and Juliet. But the movie was produced by of all people,
Harvey Weinstein.
No, it was not. Kids movie produced by Harvey Weinstein. No, it was Elton John produced the movie.
Okay. Did he do the music?
There was Elton John music in there, but it was kind of like these instrumentals that sounded like something you would hear on like kind of an easy listening station that it just was like these. Anyway, it was just a bad karaoke version. Anyway, the music was.
Any celebrities doing the voices, or are we talking like?
Well, that's the fun. So here I am in the Netherlands. So the actual movie has like Johnny Depp and Emily Blunt and a few other, you know, celebrity voices. Here it was dubbed. So not only did I see this horrible, horrible kids movie, I only understood about a quarter of what was going on in the dialogue. But I mean, I could pick up more than that. But it was It was an awful movie.
So your son now has been there. You've been there almost a year now. So how fluent is he now? I mean, I'm sure he's like ahead of you, I would imagine.
Well, actually, he doesn't speak it, but he understands it. Like when I took him to the movie, I asked him if he understood everything in that film, and he said yes. And so I think he understands a lot more than he speaks. But I'm a proud papa because I just started teaching him how to read, and he's actually getting it. So he's learning how to read, and yeah, that's a lot of fun. So teaching him how to read and spell and stuff at three, he's a smart kid.
It's a big advantage to learn a language that young, though. I mean, he'll be much more fluent than you'll ever be in your entire life. You could study 20 years, and in the next couple of years, he could pass you up.
Well, that's one of the things that I really love about living in a foreign country. One of my decisions to move here was the fact that, you know, he's going to start going to school in a few months, and he's going to be just in with the Dutch kids. So yeah, his Dutch is going to be really good, but they don't start teaching English to kids here until they're about 6 or 7. That's when they start teaching English to the kids. So he's going to be fluent in English and fluent in Dutch. So they'll probably start him when he's around 7 or 8 in like French. So by the time he's like 9 or 10, he's going to have like 3-4 languages down fluent, you know, and because we're.
And then he can work for the CIA or something like that.
Or whatever, you know. Well, I am.
Or whatever. I mean, you're not even in the U.S. So whatever foreign intelligence agencies they have in the Netherlands, he can work for them.
I am teaching him how to kill, though, like silently.
But that's important. Yeah. That's important. Yeah.
He's, you know, he's someday he'll be ready. But speaking of which, learning how to kill the Americans. You haven't seen the Americans yet.
Great. No, I have not.
Oh, my God. That is the show. They just had the season finale, which I'm just about to watch. But that's one of those shows that is epic. Epic show. So
I've heard good things. I wanna check it out. I haven't gotten to that. I mean I keep busy enough, you know, like I got a lot of work to do, and then, you know, watching Westworld, and I guess the main shows I watch are like Westworld and Better Call Saul and Silicon Valley. And Black Mirror. Those are like my big four.
Black Mirror. Black Mirror is so good. I haven't seen this is because, you know, they only come out with 6 episodes a year. And so I've only seen the first three, I think, of this season.
I really like the Star Trek.
Oh my God, that was so good.
Simulation one was so good. Not everybody likes it too. It's got mixed reviews, but I think you have to have like a little bit of a dark sense of humor, but it's and I definitely have that. So I loved it.
Episode one of season three of Black Mirror is so good. I want them to make a series out of it.
Which one is that?
That's the one, the SSS.
That's like I think it's season four.
Season four, episode one. Okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay. Speaking of spaceship things, guess what movie I have not seen?
Han Solo. Solo, a Star Wars story. I went and saw it by myself. Baby.
Because it was Solo.
I was solo at Solo. And can I give like one spoiler that really won't spoil much of the movie? I have to share this one. They for some reason, they decided that they wanted to give Han Solo's name a backstory in this movie. And so when he's like, he's getting on a ship at one point, and they're like, "What's your name, son?" And he's like, "By myself or something." And the guy's like, "Okay, oh, you're Solo. So we'll call you Solo."
Oh, that's so his name lame.
It's so lame.
His name was Irving, right?
So they had Han was his name, but he didn't have a last name until the airport attendant gave him the last name Solo.
You know something, I hate to say it, but I kind of sense this thing was going to be a stinker about a mile away. And I also hate to say it, in the same way that Disney saved the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like really making excellent. I love all the Marvel films. None of them have been.
Yeah, they've done great.
Bad. They have destroyed Star
Wars. They have absolutely.
Can I give you my beef, my biggest beef with Star Wars? Like my absolute, like this makes me like viscerally angry. I want to punch someone in the eye. I want to punch J.J. Abrams in the eye for this. Okay. After all these years, you finally have the ability to bring, you know, Han Solo, Luke and Leia, Chewbacca, R2-D2, C-3PO. You're able to put them in the same room together. Right?
Finally. Yeah.
Finally. Why would you waste it by killing off Han Solo so they could never have an adventure again.
Not only that, but they never even share the screen together. Like no. In these movies, Han Solo never sees Luke Skywalker. They never have a scene together. I mean, Han Solo and Leia do, but they didn't even bring them all together.
Look, crazy. You want to bring in new characters? That's fine. You want to have like a whole new, like this is the new generation. If you want to even have Han Solo die, let him die. But let him die when his friends are there. And there's like, okay, that's number one. Like that to me is unforgivable.
It's unforgivable. It's stupid. And talk about missed opportunities. And I mean, yeah.
It was the worst thing ever. And then number two, the fact that first of all, you have Han Solo who is his son basically pulls a Columbine, right?
Yeah.
If my son did that, I would become a broken man, right? And if the movie was exactly the same except for one difference, and that was instead of finding Han Solo and you have this crazy side quest where the monsters are running around in his new ship and then he sees his Millennium Falcon and all that stuff, instead of that, like let her just go to the bar, like when they went to that bar and saw the little
Yoda looking girl.
Yeah. So have her go there, but that's where she finds Han Solo, and he's a drunk. He's messed up, and when he sees Leia, they have to have a conversation about what happened because it was devastating. Their son destroyed the Jedi Temple and killed all these people.
Yeah.
And they show up and they're just like, hey, Leia, how's it going? Wow. It was terrible.
On top of all this, my other gripe, because these are all very valid points, but my other gripe is that they wrote these movies movie to movie and not – they didn't write – they should have written the whole thing. There's no arc. So, I mean,
it was like they had no idea what they were doing. They're just like, we're going to do this and then – and then we'll just pass the ball to
a different screenwriter. I mean, they gave Rian Johnson. So J.J. Abrams wrote the first script with a whole committee. I think he had a whole committee writing that one, which is why it's so similar to, you know, episode four, the A New Hope. But it's but then they pass it to Rian Johnson and he's like, you have full creative freedom. And this is a guy that obviously is probably wasn't a Star Wars fan coming in. I'm sure he, you know, watched things and he kind of created his own opinions. But yeah, he just totally butchered everything that was set up, was like ignored and tossed out in The Force Awakens. So all the setups were killed. There were no payoffs. The payoffs were like anti-payoffs. So instead of getting a payoff, it was like, no, fuck you. We're just going to ignore that and throw that out.
Look, on the plus side, I do give it credit for being completely unexpected. I mean, the whole movie is about failure, but it's also about the failure of a franchise. I'm just hate to say it, but I'm a little over it. And I think that it was a real warning. So I think that there was this thought that if we just put something that says Star Wars and it could be 2 hours of George Lucas taking a dump on R2-D2's head, people will pay to see it, right? I think that they've come to their senses. Hopefully, they've come to their senses and realized that's probably why they brought J.J. Abrams back in to save it. Yeah. Because I have a feeling this, if this last episode doesn't knock it out of the park,
they're in trouble.
I'm kind of done.
I mean, Solo is going to lose like hundreds of millions of dollars, at least 100 million.
Good. Yeah. Good. It's what they know. What's known in the business is a horrors movie.
And the other problem,
you do a prequel.
The other problem with that one was that they filmed like 90% of it, and then they decided that because they had the guys that did the Lego movie that did it. So the guys that did the Lego movie came in there and created like a comedy. They made Han Solo into a comedy film, and then the producers apparently didn't pay attention until like 90% of the movie was done, and they're like, "Oh,
that's great." So basically,
this is crap.
Basically, it's like the Star Wars franchise is being run like the Trump administration. Just throw anything out there. People will pay attention no matter what it is. Just pure chaos. Dogs and cats living together. Whatever.
You know. Yeah, it's weird. And then, so then they spent like an extra 100 million on reshoots, and that 100 million is probably where they're going to that's really where they're going to lose is all that extra money they spent on reshooting the film.
Ridiculous. I'm over it. I'm over the fringe. I mean, look, I'll probably go see Solo at some point, but I'm probably more going to.
I'll definitely see episode 9. I'm kind of over the spinoff films. Neither one really knocked it out of the park. I'll definitely see episode 9 and see what happens. I'll see it. But if that one messes up, then that's
well, you know, there's 9 films in productions right now, plus an entire series from the Game of Thrones people. So Rian Johnson's doing his own trilogy. I guess he's going to take it's going to take place probably in the Old Republic. And then there's like a TV show from the Game of Thrones guys, and then there's a Yoda film and a anyway, I don't know. It's we don't need that much Star Wars. We really don't. It was doing fine when there was only a few movies, and you know what I'm saying? It's like we don't need that much Star Wars. We don't. It's obvious.
It's kind of a limited universe. So there's the way that they've built the other films, they've kind of created this kind of limited universe. There's only so far you can kind of take it. I guess
Did you hear in an interview recently what George Lucas's idea for the next trilogy was going to be?
No, I never did.
He was going to deal. It was all about the midichlorians, the microscopic organisms inside of the blood that make somebody have the Force. I have no words. I have no words. I just, I don't know. It's just they're all tales told by an idiot filled with sound and fury, but signifying nothing. You know, I'm just going to have to rewatch. That's why I'm not watching Westworld right now, because I really need to just like watch some really good sci-fi, and a lot of the sci-fi out there is just not very good. It's not compelling. Although of course my favorite sci-fi of all time right now is Rick and Morty, which
it's so good. When is that
so
out?
Good.
When are they coming back? Like probably in 6 more months or so.
Well, you know, Dan Harmon.
I think they just renewed it for multiple seasons though. When they finally do start
72 episodes.
Yeah,
so they renewed it for 72 episodes, which is what we have a lot of Rick and Morty. So probably by the time my son is a teenager,
I'll get through all those.
Because the production time is so long on those, because he's so meticulous about the script writing.
Yeah.
You know, but
South Park, where they crank it out in a week and they just let it go.
there was this one great line in last season of Rick and Morty where Rick says something like, you know, how the hell do they get out an episode a week? And Morty says, I don't know, maybe they're just really fast. Or Rick says, well, maybe we're just really slow. So I don't know. They're just really slow. But Rick and Morty is definitely
great show though.
It's a great show. I have no desire to see Jurassic Park. That just looks like a
neither,
sticker.
Neither do I. I kind of liked Jurassic World. I didn't hate it. I mean, I didn't love it.
I didn't see it.
It was okay. It was
If I have 2 hours to spend, I'd rather
do something else. Go for a walk.
No, I'll tell you what's really tempting me right now. I saw some gameplay for this game Witcher 3, and I see. For me, video games is something that you really need to keep away from me, because
you'll get
it's the equivalent of giving a crack addict a crack pipe and a big sack of crack and just saying, "Can you hold on to these while I go to the store? I'll be right back." And then the friend doesn't come back for like a week. That's basically video games to me.
I keep reading about all these virtual reality platforms. I'm like, oh, this sounds awesome. I want to see like when they're going to really lock in virtual reality. But all the games that I've seen that have been demoed on virtual reality, the graphics are terrible. They don't look very fun. I mean, I don't know. I haven't really tried it yet, but like, I don't know. VR still seems like it's like 10 to 20 years away from being like a really solid platform at this point.
Yeah. You know, the only thing that's going to really launch VR, I'll be sold on VR when I can get a blowjob from Princess Leia in her metal bikini on the Millennium Falcon.
And I think it's
it
real.
Feels like I'm there.
Yeah.
And Chewbacca's looking at me, giving me like a dirty look. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this are right now.
I'm sure.
But when that moment happens, I'll be like, okay, I'm in the future. This is This is the technology.
We have made it. We have made it. This is what the scientists were trying to do all along.
That's right. When I can truly experience Japanese tentacle porn the way it's meant to be experienced, I have reached the pinnacle of full.
Now we're in the future. This is true sci-fi come to reality.
That is right. Because you all know damn well, like all you listening, like there's a part of that some of you are like, ooh, that's so disgusting. I can't believe you just said that. But you know, if you could really experience tentacle porn, you know y'all would. You know it. Just to see what that's about. Like, I mean, because look, there's a segment of this population on this planet that really is into that. So you know it's got like there's gotta be something to it, right? I mean
I'm like,
right? Maybe?
I'm not even that familiar with it, but I can kind of get it from the title.
What's there to be?
Tentacle porn. I think it's clear. It's clear.
Yeah. What else do you need?
There's a lot of little niche. We're talking about marketing, so you know these are niche markets. These are niche markets. That's a very niche.
You know, the conversation I have with my wife sometimes is you know, I try to see where the limits are. So I go, okay, so. Maybe what would happen if I had a sex robot in the house? And she was like, oh, you know, I think I could live with that. And it's like, okay, but what if the sex robot had like AI attached to it? And so it was like responsive to me. Is that cheating? Well, no, because it's still a robot. Okay, what if someone else was controlling the robot? They're not here, but they're like on another part of the world. And eventually she just looks at me. She doesn't even answer or shake her head.
Where the boundaries are. Just finding the boundaries, right?
Yeah. I just want to know exactly what is considered cheating and what is considered me just like. I think that really looking back at this conversation as it's coming back over my mouth, through my mouth, as I'm hearing it, I'm realizing I probably need therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to talk about that right now? Why don't we do that on the air here? So why don't you tell me more about that?
It all started when I was inappropriately touched by my Hoover vacuum cleaner.
Wow.
And
that must have been pretty hard on you, huh?
Yeah, me too.
So this is what's interesting is like this show is quickly covering pop. We're covering culture. We're covering all these different things. We're not talking that much about marketing, but that's okay because I love, you know, pop culture, movies, all this wonderful stuff.
But that's why we're the marketing geeks. But I'll tell you.
We're the marketing ADD. Marketing ADD geeks. That might be the better title.
Right. You know, I was just reading one thing that is very interesting because you and I, of course, our favorite platform for social media is, of course, LinkedIn.
Yes.
We created the LinkedIn Mastery Course to help people with that. And I just found out that LinkedIn is rolling out a new sponsored content carousel ads. Ooh. That includes up to 10 customized swipeable cards. So, you know, they're trying to crack the advertising nut, and I don't think it's really going to happen for LinkedIn.
Not the way it did for Facebook. It won't. They don't have the audience. I mean, they're always going to be a business-centric network, and they might expand a little bit. But, I mean, you know, Facebook, you're going to find everybody. LinkedIn, you're never going to get that big of a population. So, I think people love Facebook because, like, pretty much everybody on the planet, I mean, a good chunk of them anyway, but especially before this last controversy, had a Facebook account and they were, you know, and they could get their ads in front of them. But LinkedIn will never have that wide of a reach.
But LinkedIn is great. Well, but it does have a reach for a couple of
things. Well, it's got a niche. I mean it's you have more business professionals and some people, the older demographic that will probably never click on a Facebook ad, but they might click on a LinkedIn ad. So you got a different reach. Yeah. I mean there's different advantages.
That's true. And I would never waste money, but, you know, and like, why would I advertise on LinkedIn when I could reach out to the decision makers directly? That's the problem with it. Plus, it's a bit more expensive than
everything. It's cost per click and it's more expensive than Google even. So it's, and I like what you said. I mean, you could just invest in Sales Navigator instead, target the decision makers and then just run a campaign directly to a bunch of decision makers manually instead of just running an ad.
Here's a perfect example. So right now I have a job working for a small software company here in the Netherlands that deals with software for municipalities to help with their parking enforcement. So the way that it works is that you'll have a car, looks like a Google car with cameras on it, and it drives around neighborhoods and it scans license plates, and that data is sorted through the software that my company makes. And so right now we're trying to bust into the UK market. And so what I'm able to do is I'm able to use the LinkedIn search features to find out who is the decision makers in those municipalities and target those people and then contact them directly. Now, the only problem with that is that a lot of decision makers in municipalities tend to be slightly older and they don't understand the value of LinkedIn. So a lot of the people that I need to get in contact with are not on LinkedIn. And they may be on Facebook, but I don't want to advertise that particular type of software because it's very niche to people on Facebook, because you know there's no point on doing that. So you know, the question then is, and this is a question maybe you might know the answer to, how does one advertise to a group of people who are niche and maybe older, so they're not quite embracing social media platforms like LinkedIn? How do you get to those?
Well, you got to find out where they hang out. So, I mean, that's all research. So maybe you get off your ass and you go door to door to wherever they work or they hang, you know, or you find out where they are. And generally there's going to be something. So it could be going back to old school marketing techniques. These people might be listening to the radio still, like terrestrial radio, which still exists. So it might be advertising on the radio. It might be advertising on television. I mean, you know, there's a segment of the market that will never be on Facebook or LinkedIn or Instagram or any of those platforms that you have to look at. So where are they? So it's just going back to old school marketing techniques. It's just like, okay, we know who my target market is. Now let's analyze what's their behavior. So where are they spending their time? And then it's advertising wherever they're spending their time. Maybe they're reading the newspaper. So it's like, okay, newspaper ads still work for a very small segment of the population. Yellow Pages ads still can work, but for a very, very, very niche market. And it's an older market that still opens the books and looks at them, but it's a very, you know, but I would never, that's not who I'm targeting. But if I'm targeting, you know, 72 year old men that, that still like to look at the Yellow Pages, then I guess
that exists.
There are people that still use them. It's just a very small amount. So it's nothing compared to what it once was. So it's really just finding out where they are, and then what's the best way to reach them. And then looking at cost effectiveness too, because, you know, running television and radio ads can be expensive. So it's like, okay, what's the best way, most cost effective way that I can actually get my message in front of these people.
And for me, you know, the answer is actually befriending these associations. Like there's the British Parking Association. Yeah. We're trying to break into the UK market.
So that's like just live networking. I mean,
live networking. And then you run events. You do like a presentation on something that is going to be interesting to them. And so you run an event, you position yourself as a thought leader within that industry. And, you know, if you have to have a really dynamite presentation, and, you know, the advantage that I think you and I have is that there's a lot of bad presenters out there. If you're not a dynamic speaker. So, you know, if you're interested in marketing, if you're interested in like marketing your business, find the association that, you know, where people are members of, and do a presentation in front of it, do something that knocks their socks off. Like, really, you know, take some toastmastering classes and
toastmastering. I like that.
I'm a master of toast. Got your Nutella, got your peanut butter.
I never burn a piece
because you know why? You are a toastmaster.
I mean, but it's true. So, it's true. And it's funny, like if you're going for an older demographic, it's funny because like I've been to networking groups here, you know, in where I live in Westlake, and some of those groups are just filled with retired former business owners that really are there mostly to hang out, but they still have money and they still do they do business with people. So yeah, you find out where they are, and they might be members of associations or like Rotary clubs or, you know, or chambers of commerce. And if you position yourself as the thought leader, so if you either create like a meetup group or something where you're attracting those people, or you just go in there and you give a presentation, then you have authority. And when you have authority, people buy from you. It's like what I mean, being on Fiverr Pro, you know, I have authority because I've been vetted as a pro on Fiverr, and I have people reaching out to me. And, you know, marketing is all about starting conversations. So nobody really buys anything from, rarely do people buy like just clicking through websites. Usually they want to have at least one interaction. That might be a chat. It might just be a chat interaction, but they want to have some sort of interaction with somebody before they buy. And that's either like going to be chat, or it's going to be a phone call, or it's going to be a webinar. But if you can create these interactions, then yeah, you can grow your business massively.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really about relationship building more than anything else. Yeah. People want to, you know, they want to feel good about who they're doing business
with. But the perception of authority is huge. I mean, that's big. Like when people, and again, like the fastest way to create perceived authority is being a leader. So like whether you're leading a group or you're, or even if you have like letters behind your name, like, you know, you have an MD, something like that. I mean, that creates massive authority, and then people just trust you.
I know. I have an FU right behind my name. It's true. It's true.
It is true.
So, have you made the GDRP transition?
The GDRP transition. I'm very familiar with it. I am not fully compliant. I'm partially compliant at this point. I don't rush it because I don't really target your, I mean, the main thing is the language is vague, number one. So nobody knows for sure how strict this enforcement's going to be. Nobody knows yet because it's brand new. Number two is I don't target European Union members. So if I'm not targeting them, then I'm probably not going to be the primary. I think first and foremost, they're going to go for people that are targeting European Union customers and are violating.
I had to go through it. I actually went through the whole thing. We had to put a thing on our website and like go through a whole like, you know, red tape sort of thing here in the Netherlands, because the Netherlands is part of the European Union. So the Netherlands, just so for those, because sometimes I would say to people like, I'm going to the Netherlands. Like, where the hell's that? Like the Netherlands? I'm like, Holland, where's that? And so for those of you who don't know, it's right across from England. So there's a channel, and then
you know what they put on French fries in Holland instead of ketchup? Dang it.
Mayonnaise. Lots of mayonnaise. And curry ketchup. That's the other thing. And the mayonnaise is different here. Yeah, mayonnaise is fantastic. So we're right above Germany and right near France. And so we're kind of like bordering those countries. Belgium, so if I go south, just south of where I live, I'll hit Belgium. And just south of that, there's France. And then just to the east of me, there's Germany. So I'm right near all these countries, and I can fly to almost any of them for $50. It's incredible.
See, not only do you learn marketing and movie news, but you also learn geography on this podcast.
Yeah, I'm learning a lot of freaking geography here because
I've never been to Europe. But, I've never even, you know, the farthest I've been out of the country is I've been to the Dominican Republic, and I've been to Mexico. I've been to Canada for like driving to a cruise port. But that's about it.
You got to get over here. You got to get over here. You know, Wow Air. It's you know, we'll do a Marketing Geeks show live. So, all right, give us three big marketing tips, and we'll as we close out the show, I want to hear the big three marketing tips
from me. From you. Big three marketing tips. Let me think. Yeah. Let me think for a second. Well, why don't you start us off with number one, tips. And then why don't we just take turns here? You start with number one.
Okay. Let's say marketing hacks. All right. My marketing hack of the day is to use SlideShare to create your field of mastery, whatever you think you know, whatever you are the master of. As we were saying, you have to be an expert in your field. Use SlideShare, which is connected to LinkedIn. LinkedIn bought this company called SlideShare, which is basically like PowerPoint. If you go into your LinkedIn profile, you go to the top right-hand side, you'll see a little checkboard menu. You open that up, it'll take you to SlideShare. Create a SlideShare based on your area of expertise because it's search engine optimized. And if somebody is looking for a particular thing and they search for that particular phrase that's in your SlideShare, it might show up towards the top of your search
results. That's a good one. That's a good little known fact. Number two, then, I'm going to stick with LinkedIn here. Let's talk about profile. When you're writing your profile, Probably 90% of people are just copying and pasting their resume onto their LinkedIn profile, and they think that's enough. If you're and that might be if you're looking for a job, but if you're a business owner, and that's what we're talking about marketing, so I assume that most of you are business owners or you're at least your sales professionals, you should actually be writing your profile speaking to your target market segment instead of to a theoretical hiring manager that you don't need anymore because you already have a job or you already are self-employed. So start thinking in terms of write your profile for the end user in mind. The end user should be the person buying from you. Mm. So when you're speaking to them, don't tell them how awesome you are at selling them. Tell them how awesome you are at servicing them and solving their problems, right? I mean, that makes sense, right? You're solving their problems. That's a
good one. Yeah.
And then the other thing, just to echo what you just said about getting, you know, your profile ranked on search engines, your LinkedIn profile is going to show up usually in the top three results of Google search. So it's not just LinkedIn. So I just did a presentation on this, and I actually made some slides about this, and I grabbed a few employees from the company and I Googled their names and took screenshots, and I'm like, let's look at the results here. Look, for some of them, they were like, their number one search result was their LinkedIn profile when I Googled their name. And then it's either always the top three.
Yeah. So be mindful of that. Yeah. With your, for those of you who are getting Googled because you're on, some sort of like anybody wants to just find out about you, make sure that you look super pro, because that is going to determine whether or not people are going to do.
So why don't you give one more tip and one more tip, and then we'll wrap up.
It matters. Okay. So my last tip is, here's a good one. If you are doing any YouTube stuff on YouTube, before you upload your video, make sure that the video file name is keyword optimized. Make sure that you have the names of the what you want the video to be keyworded for.
And the thumbnail.
Somebody is searching for that particular video. And the reason why is because, the thumbnail is a secondary part of it, but the video file name, when you export it, because a lot of times when you export a video file, it'll just be called movie one or whatever. It'll just some random, or somebody will just put a temporary name. The name of the file when you export it before you upload it to YouTube is included in the search results. So they factor that in. A lot of people don't know that. So
that's good. It matters. Anything you can do to get a little boost on SEO is important. So, I mean, and YouTube is the number two search network out there behind Google, and Google owns both of them. But I mean, get found in YouTube.
Right. That's right. So I want to find out what's geeking you out, everybody. Like, what do you love? What are you geeky about? Like, you know, is it sci-fi?
Questions.
Is it marketing?
Give us your comments.
Is it just like,
subscribe, rate, share.
Ask your questions.
Rate five stars. Why not? Who cares? Who cares if you don't like it? Rate it five stars anyway.
We're unqualified to really give you good answers.
That's right.
We give you the best answers we can.
The best answers that we can give.
All right.
We can promise you that much.
So, from the Netherlands,
from Camarillo, stay classy.
Stay classy.